Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. Your boy is officially back from vacation, 3 long weeks away in Europe. I miss you guys. I am glad to be back. On today's show, we're going to be doing a mailbag, part one of a 3-part mailbag. Without further ado, let's get into it. First one from Saddy Boy. In your opinion, what do you think is the best approach to filling the starting power forward hole on the team? Go into the season as is and find targets at the deadline, or push really hard for a PJ Washington or DeAndre Hunter now? This is perhaps the biggest on-court question for the Lakers. Off of the court, there are, of course, numerous questions, particularly at the ownership level and with the future of the organization. But in terms of basketball, in terms of the roster, who is the fifth starter is probably the biggest question right now. And I think there are 3 pathways for the Lakers. 2 of them I like, 1 of them I would avoid if I were them. And you laid out 2 of them. Pathway number 1 is pursue the upgrade now, and specifically a starting level player. And I want to make a distinction here because you listed 2 names, PJ Washington and DeAndre Hunter. And I think there's a big difference between these two. I think PJ Washington is a starter on a good team, a team that wants to compete with San Antonio and OKC and New York. I don't think DeAndre Hunter is. So pathway number 1 is pursue the upgrade with a starting level player like a PJ Washington, like a Derrick Jones Jr. I don't think he's gettable, but like a Cam Johnson, someone like that. I'm not saying those specific names necessarily, though I do think PJ Washington and Derrick Jones Jr. would be great fits, but that caliber of player. Pathway number 2 is Stan Pat. Hope for some internal improvement. Hope that one of the internal candidates, be it Jake LaRavia or Zaire Williams, Adu Thiro, Jared Vanderbilt, etc., one of those guys pops to a level that it's clear they should be starting. They win the training camp battle, they win the preseason battle, and they're the fifth starter. And then if you're not happy with their performance 30 to 40 games into the season, you could potentially swap one of the bench guys in to replace them, or you can make a trade at the deadline. At a minimum, the Lakers are projected to have the non-taxpayer mid-level exception available to them in the 2027 offseason, so you can get by with the current group through this season and then potentially address it next summer if you don't like what's out there at the deadline. And then pathway number 3 is where I would slot guys like DeAndre Hunter, Kyle Kuzma, Grant Williams. That is the go get the name, go get the pedigree guy, go get someone who on paper is an upgrade, but who's not really a starting level player. So it is a version of pathway number 1. I just think that it's pathway number 1 is the PJ Washington, Derrick Jones Jr., the guy who's clearly a starter, the guy who would plug what the Lakers need. Path 3 is get a guy, get a name, but it's not someone who's really going to move the needle. If it's between guys like DeAndre Hunter, Kyle Kuzma, or Grant Williams, and a Zaire, or a Jake, or a Vando, or an Adu, I would rather save the assets and bet on the Lakers' current players. I don't think they should be investing in players who are not starting level guys. Of course, they're at 16 players. They need to still make a move to get down to 15 by the start of the season. So that could just be waiving someone. That could be a 2-for-1 trade. Like, they will still need to make some move in the future. But in terms of adding to the roster, or in terms of trying to add a starting level player, I think the distinction here is it needs to be a starting level player, a player you can put out there and feel confident using against San Antonio, OKC, New York, Philadelphia, Cleveland, whatever team you want to put up there. You could throw in Minnesota and Denver and Houston, like the top teams in the league. Are you confident in that player starting against those teams and holding their own at that position, doing what you need, which is defending at a certain level, defending multiple positions, shooting at a certain level, playing off of the ball, having off-ball utility, rebounding at a certain level, and just doing the dirty work? I don't have the same level of confidence in guys like DeAndre Hunter, Kyle Kuzma, Grant Williams, of doing that at a starting level, doing that at 24 minutes a night, 26 minutes a night, 28 minutes a night compared to guys like PJ Washington, Derek Jones Jr., et cetera. So again, I think that my preferred plan would be go get the PJ, go get the DJJ. It doesn't seem like that's the way things are trending right now, especially with the Lakers uncertainty at the ownership level and that looming over potentially moves right now, or certainly them bolstering the front office. But with the uncertainty and just the influx nature of the franchise, and just how deep we are into the offseason, it seems like right now they are going to move forward with this group. And again, maybe there's waiving someone or doing some sort of two for one, or you know, dumping a guy somewhere, and they will make some sort of move to trim the roster. But aside from that, it feels like this group, at least for now, is the most likely group. And so in that case, I think there should be a training camp battle. There should be a preseason battle among multiple players, and let the best man win. If Jake LaRavia regains his shot, regains his offensive confidence, I think he's a strong candidate, at least among the current group. Zaire Williams, if he continues to develop as a shooter, if he continues to bulk up a bit and play with more physicality and aggression, and show he can play in the interior a little bit more, then he might make the most sense. Adu continues to develop, as we saw in Summer League. Maybe he gets an opportunity. So my preference would be an external candidate of a certain caliber. If you can't land a player of a certain caliber, then I would stand pat, revisit this at the trade deadline or at the latest next offseason. Next question from Varindra. Recent reports said Zaire is now about 215 pounds. Does this make him more suitable for you as our starting four since we missed out on Kuminga? Yes, it does. So according to a recent report from the Orange County Register, Zaire Williams said he has bulked up to 215 pounds. He is listed at 185 pounds on NBA.com and Basketball Reference, etc. Basically anywhere where his weight is listed, he's at 185. I think he was already a bit heavier than that. To me, he looks more like, you know, 200, 205 pounds. So I don't know. It was more like 10 to 15 pounds. He's bulked up recently, but that is an encouraging development. At the same time, I don't want to make too much of this. I've seen some people, I think, overreact a little bit and be like, well, he's clearly the choice now, or this locked it up, or whatever. Like, 215 pounds is still pretty light for a starting four. And again, there's some distinction here where offensively, he would be the four in that lineup. Defensively, he would be the three or the four, depending on the night and depending on what the Lakers need from him. So it's encouraging. It's positive that he has bulked up and is now 215 pounds. I would feel more comfortable if he was like 225 pounds, 230 pounds. I don't think he's got the frame for that. And I think if he did bulk up to that level, it would probably affect his quickness, his speed, his athleticism, his verticality, etc. So 215 is probably like, maybe he could bulk up to 220 max, but you probably want to keep him in that 215 to 220 range. He's still going to be at a disadvantage in certain matchups. I think about the Twin Towers look with OKC. I think about Utah and their front line, whether he's matched up with Lauri Markkanen or Triple J. Houston and their front line with Şengün, Jabari, and KD. There are some matchups where he's just going to be either a little too short or not strong enough, not physical enough. Just him battling in the paint, I do have some concerns. What I will note with Zaire, though, is if you look at his numbers, he's coming off of a down rebounding season. But prior to that, he had actually been rebounding the ball at a respectable level. This past season, he had a 6.1% rebound percentage. But prior to that, he was at 10.6%, 9.5% on the defensive side. This past year, 10% defensive rebound rate. But the season before, 17.5%, season before, 15.9%. So I think if he can get back to rebounding the ball at the rate he previously did, that combined with his increased mass, weight, strength, puts him in a good position to be the starter. I have progressively gone from thinking Jake should be the starter more toward the Zaire side. I think Zaire has the higher ceiling. I think he has more untapped potential than Jake. But really what it comes down to for me is I look at his athleticism and the off-ball utility that he has as a cutter, as a transition threat, and his willingness and growth as a spot-up shooter, as a catch-and-shoot guy. Still not shooting at the level that you want from him, but if he can nudge up that 34% into the 36-37% range, coupled with his athletic gifts. And then if he can get back to rebounding at his previous rates, he probably checks the most boxes overall. I think Jake is probably the better rebounder. I think it's close. And again, if you go back to Zaire's previous levels, it's more of a conversation. Jake is stronger. I think Jake is more physical than Zaire. And he's a little bit bigger overall, to the point that I'm a little bit more confident in Jake battling guys in the post. But there's more to it than just that, right? And another factor will be Jake's shooting, his offensive confidence, etc. But barring Jake returning to being like a 38 or 40% three-point shooter, if he's somewhere in the low to mid-30s, I would give the edge to Zaire, despite him not necessarily having the size or physicality or rebounding that you would want from that position. I think he does have enough versatility in his game and enough untapped potential among the candidates, at least, to be the one that probably makes the most sense. So I think it's close between Jake and Zaire. I fluctuate depending on the day in terms of how I feel, but I have probably shifted more toward 55% Zaire, 45% Jake. Next one from Golden. What are your thoughts on the final roster construction and where the team finishes? I think they'll finish somewhere in the 3-6 range. And right now I have them fifth. The roster construction is something that still confuses me. I like all the guys they got, but especially after they missed on Kuminga, it makes no sense to me why they prioritized a backup guard like Sexton instead of targeting a starting wing in free agency. I like Sexton a lot, but targeting a backup that won't close games instead of targeting a wing starter doesn't make any sense. I would have offered the Sexton deal to Oubre and signed Conley or Bruce Brown as a backup to eat some of the minutes. I'd also be fine with having one of Bronny or Hardy be the backup at 10 to 12 minutes. I don't think that's the worst thing. I just think this version of the team would be more complete and well-rounded. Thoughts? I'm with you. I think this has been my biggest gripe with the Lakers roster construction is I see the value and importance of having a good backup point guard, and the Lakers clearly check that box and address that need. At the same time, due to Sexton's defensive limitations, I think there is a limitation to how much he can play with Austin and Luka. And because of that, I don't think he can close games at the highest levels. And I don't think he could play that much against OKC and San Antonio and New York and teams of that caliber come playoff time, or at least not, you know, maybe he's more of a 16 to 18 minute a night guy instead of being a 24 to 26 minute a night guy like he is in the regular season. And because of that, I just would have rather invested that in a player who would be able to potentially close those games next to Austin and Luka, and a player who could complement those guys a bit better than Sexton can. Like, Sexton fills a need, but I don't think he necessarily complements the best players. Like, sure, he gives you great insurance if one of those guys is out, but if one of those guys goes down with injury, like, he'll help you in the regular season, but the Lakers, we saw the limitation, that the ceiling this past postseason, they can get by against teams of a certain caliber. And remember, they had LeBron James in that scenario. But when it comes to the OKCs, the San Antonios, etc., like, you're not going to beat those teams if you don't have Luka. And I would even argue Austin, like, you still have a chance because you have Luka. But losing Austin with their current roster construction, he is by far their second best scorer and shot creator and ball handler and playmaker. That losing that would be a devastating blow for them. So I understand the argument of Sexton gives you insurance. Sexton gives you, like, those guys tend to miss games. You could probably pencil in 10 to 15 missed games for Luka and Austin. Sexton will help in that scenario. But ultimately, the Lakers' ceiling case here, and that's what we care about, is the Lakers' upside, that their ceiling, like, that will be determined by the availability of Luka and Austin. If those guys aren't available, it doesn't matter how good your backup point guard is, unless it's like an all-star level player that you're replacing those guys with, which obviously Sexton is not. So I like, to your point, I would have been cool, and I have made this point before, that my preference would have been Oubre of the options. But of course, there was Marcus Smart. That was a complicated situation that I still don't have great clarity on as to why he's not back, but it just seemed like he didn't want to come back for whatever reason. But Dean Wade is another name of guys that I think could have been the fifth starter. I think if Oubre or Wade or Smart was on this team, they would be starting. But Oubre and Wade specifically, I think, would be the fifth starter right now. I think they'd start over Zaire, they'd start over Jake, and it would make some sense. And then you could have Bruce Brown. I like Bruce Brown. Mike Conley, not as sold on still as a rotation level guy on a playoff team. I know Boston's investing in that. I we'll see how that plays out. I'd rather have Oubre or Wade for the room exception and then have Bruce Brown as the backup guard. And to your point, you could go with Bronny. You could go with Hardy. I don't think you could go with those guys against the top teams. I think they're fine, passable in the regular season, but they're not playoff players in like the second round and above. That they're, I would even say, borderline playoff players in the first round, but in the regular season, you could get by with that. So I'm with you. This has been my biggest gripe is I see the value of Sexton. I understand the appeal. I think that is a real need for this team. I'm not denying that. I just think a bigger need is clearly the fifth starter and a player who's above the sort of level of Jake and Zaire and Matisse and all these guys who are kind of in that same level of bench wing. And maybe one of those guys pops again. Maybe Jake regains his shot. Maybe Zaire emerges. Maybe Adu develops. Maybe JJ finally trusts Vando and Vando rewards that trust with some better offensive performance. Like maybe one of those things happens, but barring that, I think this is clearly the big need on this roster. And it's not to say like, every roster has its flaws, but most of the other teams, whatever their flaws are, like they have a coherent, competent starting group together. This group right now, I think they're kind of at four starters. And even then, that's with the projection that Grimes fully establishes himself as a starting level player, which has been debatable over the last couple of years. So I would say that I'm with you that I think it would have made more sense to have signed a better wing slash forward to be that fifth starter and also just take the money that you gave to Sexton. But they want the Sexton path, and we'll see if they're able to find that guy either internally or find that guy externally before the season, at the trade deadline, or next summer. In terms of where the team finishes, I remain bullish on the Lakers. I think with Denver losing Peyton Watson and losing some of their depth, with Minnesota reworking its identity and losing some of their depth as well, Houston should be better. They're getting Fred VanVleet back. They're getting Steven Adams back. They added Marcus Smart. I still view the Lakers as a top three or four team in the West. I think with Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves as a foundation, it's going to be a top 10 offense. They're going to win 50 plus games. You add in Walker Kessler and his defense, they should be closer to league average on that side. So assuming reasonable health for the Lakers, I have them as a home court advantage team. Right now, I might tentatively put them like fourth in the West. And I'll say one of Minnesota, Denver, Houston ends up being third, and the other two are fifth and sixth. But I remain bullish on the Lakers in the regular season. I have some concerns in the playoffs, but for the regular season, I think this is going to be a good team that at a minimum is in the high 40s, but I would say 50 plus wins and most likely a home court advantage team. Next one from Christian. So excited for the season to start, Jovan. I believe this team could make a deep playoff run. Agree or disagree, and why? I'm so excited as well. Lakers Media Day is in less than a month. We're about a month away from their first preseason game and then 7 weeks away from the start of the regular season. So the offseason has flown by. Lakers basketball is now around the corner again. So I agree. I echo what you're saying. I'm very excited as well. Now, in terms of making a deep playoff run, I would say it depends how you define a deep playoff run. If you define a deep playoff run as anything beyond the first round, I agree. If you define a deep playoff run as anything conference finals and beyond, I would disagree. I would say it is unlikely. I would say there's a slim chance of LA making it that far. Now, the one scenario I could see it potentially playing out that way would be if somehow OKC and San Antonio are on the same side of the bracket, one of those two teams suffers a slew of injuries, underperforms in the regular season, and somehow they end up on, say, like the 1/4 or 5 side of the bracket. The Lakers are on the other side of the bracket. okay, I think conference finals is in play. But assuming that OKC and San Antonio are the top two seeds in the West and win 60 plus games, which I'm projecting both of them to do, I think the Lakers will run in to one of them in the second round and lose. I think it can be a competitive series. It can be a 5 or 6 game series against either one of those teams. But that is my current projection for the Lakers is if you ask me how I think the season is going to end, I think they're going to lose in round two to either OKC or San Antonio, assuming they figure out the starting group. Walker Kessler is as good as advertised, etc. I think the Lakers can have a competitive showing in the second round, but I don't see them going beyond that. I don't see them pulling off the upset against either one of those teams. Never say never with Luka. You always have a chance, but I think both teams have a player who can match or at least get close to matching Luka's production. And then they just have better fitting starting groups, more defensive talent, and overall, I think just better top 7, top 8s with those respective teams. So yeah, I mean, I would say it's I guess feasible to me that they win in the second round and like lose in the conference finals, but I think that would be a 7-game bloodbath with either one of those teams, and then the Lakers would just be limping into the conference finals and probably be depleted, gassed, and then lose. So I guess I won't say it's impossible that they win a second round series, but I think realistically, this team wins 48 to 52 games, is a 3-5 seed, and then wins a round but loses in round two to OKC or San Antonio. Next one from Unknown Music. If you had to predict one breakout player for the Lakers, who would it be? Also, if you had to guess if they make a trade, would you guess they will or won't? I'll start with the second part of this question first. I could see the Lakers making a small move in terms of, again, some sort of dumping a player onto another team, or maybe a 2-for-1 situation where they shed a roster spot because they need to go from 16 players to 15 players. I could see something like that. But in terms of a bigger deal to get a PJ Washington type, I'm skeptical of that as of right now with the current information that I have, in part because of the ownership front office uncertainty. I would say that I think right now the most likely outcome is the Lakers having the current version of the roster with eventually some tweaking at the back end to either waive a player or trade dump a player, or again, do some sort of 2-for-1, something like that. But I think they're most likely going to stand pat with the core of the roster and then potentially address that at some point during the season. So that would be my answer to the second part of this. The first part of this, I think it's an easy answer. If I'm predicting a breakout player, well, okay, so I'm going to say that there's multiple guys that come to mind, because the first guy that came to mind is Zaire Williams, especially if he wins the starting spot. I could see this being a big year for Zaire. I think at like a higher level, you could look at Austin Reeves and Walker Kessler. Does Austin become an all-star this year? Does he get some All-NBA third team consideration? Like, can he have that type of season? I think that's in play. Can Walker Kessler get some defensive player of the year love? Can he get some all defense consideration? Can he potentially even be an all-star? I think that's in play as well. Maybe not all-star or defensive player of the year, because I think Wemby, as long as he's healthy, will have DPOY locked up. But I could see Walker Kessler getting some all defense love and at least being a second team all defense guy, if not potentially a first team all defense guy. Austin, I could see being an all-star. So I would say those are the three guys I look at. The dark horse to me would be Adu here, where Adu, with the progress that we saw from him in summer league, can he really pop in the rotation and become a big part of what the Lakers are doing and potentially even earn a starting spot? I would not rule that out. I think it's unlikely, but I don't think it's impossible. So I would say, like, depending on your definition of breakout, right? Like, Austin, I think, has already broken out. He was on the U.S. men's select basketball team. He was getting some all-star buzz prior to his injury last season. He just got the big contract. Like, Austin is a known commodity at this point. I don't know if he's a breakout necessarily. Kessler with the LA stage, I guess, could qualify as a breakout, or just leveling up to a different tier of stardom or status in LA. And then Zaire, to me, would be the one who potentially breaks through, breaks out, and makes a name for himself in LA. As I talk through this, some, you know, more names come to mind. I think Quentin Grimes is another guy who can establish himself as a legitimate starter, as a two-way guard for the Lakers, and really elevate himself to a different level. If you perform well in the purple and gold, you will be rewarded. It might not happen while you're a Laker because people are reluctant to acknowledge Lakers role players and how good they are. But certainly if you leave the Lakers in the future, you will retroactively be rewarded and praised for your play, as we've seen with numerous guys, Alex Caruso, KCP, Malik Monk, etc. Like, if you perform well in LA, that'll catapult you to elsewhere, and then that's when you'll get your flowers. But I would say Zaire, Walker Kessler, and Quentin Grimes are some names. But if I had to pick one, I would pick Zaire. Next one from Ginger Cat. What do you think the Lakers' win-loss record will be by Christmas Day? I went through the Lakers schedule and my prediction is 18-10, which is a 53 win pace. They do have an easier schedule to start out. I will note that this technically includes the NBA Cup portion of the schedule. So there are a couple games here that we just don't know who the Lakers are going to play. So technically they will have played 30 games, not 28, or at least 30 games, not 28 by this point. So the 18-10 is through the 28 games that we know. But looking at the schedule, there are a ton of winnable games. There are some difficult games. I look at Miami, at Detroit, at Phoenix, at Utah, at San Antonio, at Houston. And then it gets difficult right before Christmas. Tough road trip at Minnesota, at Denver. That's a back-to-back at Minnesota, at Denver. They play Indiana. They play Denver again. Then, of course, they play Philadelphia on Christmas. So it starts to get tougher in December, but I think 18-10 is in play here. That could even be a little bit low. This could be 20-8. It could also be 16-12. Like, I think there's a range depending on health and how long it takes the Lakers to gel with this relatively new group. But I have them at 18-10 through the first 28 games. But I think the Lakers will get off to a good start. They have a relatively balanced schedule in terms of home games versus away games. And my prediction right now would be 18-10 without knowing the two NBA Cup matchups. Next one from Amun. What's your biggest worry for next season about the team? My biggest worry is health. Looking at Luka, Austin, and Walker Kessler, that has not been the most durable trio over the past 2 or 3 years. So that would be my biggest concern. Just, can the Lakers get ideally 70-ish games out of each of those three guys, 65 plus games out of each of those three guys? If so, I think they should be in the mix for home court 50 plus wins. So health is the biggest thing. If I had to nitpick a bit or compare the Lakers roster to some of the other rosters, I've made this point before, but I think spots like 4 through 6 on the roster are a little bit shakier compared to other teams. So spots 1 through 3, if you want to go Luka, Austin, and Walker, you could throw that trio up, especially if Walker ascends to the level that I think he's going to ascend to. You can put that trio up against a lot of trios, and they're going to hold their own or at least be competitive, in my opinion, against a ton of the top trios in the NBA. They're not the best trio in the NBA. There's still trios I would take above them, to be clear. I would still take OKC's trio above them. I would still take San Antonio's trio above them. Taking De'Aaron Fox out of the trio, I would still take San Antonio's trio. New York, you could argue, if it's Brunson, Cat, OG, okay, I'll take that trio. But they're up there, and I think they're competitive with that top part of the roster. Spots 4 through 6 to me are probably Grimes, Mamu, and Sexton in some order. I would tentatively put them in that specific order, but we could debate spots 4 through 6 on the roster. That's where I start to have some concerns comparing them to, again, for me, I'm going to put Wemby, Castle, and Harper as the top three in San Antonio. Then you get to Fox, Vassell, Champagne, and comparing those three to Grimes, Mamu, Sexton, I don't think it's close. You look at OKC and their 4 through 6 of Mitchell, Hartenstein, and Kayson Wallace or Caruso, depending on who you want to, like, they could go to 7 or 8 guys, but whoever you want to put in that next three after Shea, Chet, and J-Dub, Like that smokes the Lakers 4-6 as well. In New York, it's Bridges and Hart. And then there is a drop off in that potentially makes it a little bit more competitive. But I would take Bridges and Hart over Grimes or anyone else on the Lakers. So I think the Lakers have the top end talent to compete with those teams. I think the middle portion of the roster, be it filling out the rest of the starting group or those top end bench guys, like that 4-6, 4-7 on the Lakers roster, I don't think is as strong as some of the other top end teams. Again, if you go to like Philly, right, their top three, whatever order, Maxi, Jalen, Embiid, Maxi, Jalen, LeBron, however you want to divvy that up. You have either Embiid or LeBron plus Vijay Edgecombe in the next group. And then you have Simons or Wade or whoever. It's just, I think the Lakers, like that's the portion where, okay, like if their stars match the other stars or even outproduce them, I still think they're at a pretty big disadvantage in the 4-6, 4-7 spots. So if I had to nitpick something or express a concern, that would be it. Similarly, Minnesota comes to mind of if you go Ant, LaMelo, and Gobert, or Ant, LaMelo, and Jaden, then the next tier is like Gobert and Ayo and Kuminga. I think the Lakers can punch above their weight to a degree, and maybe someone emerges or they make another move. Their 4-6, 4-7 is just a bit weaker than the rest of the teams that they're going to be competing against. And that is a concern for me in addition to their health. And final one from Chuck Dangler, AKA Fang Charlie. How was the vacation? That's my question. The vacation was great. This was probably my favorite trip I've taken with my wife, and we tend to travel a few times a year. We typically take one big summer trip, and then we'll do some smaller trips during the year, especially during the season. She might come on a road trip. For those who are unaware, I went to Europe for 3 weeks. We went to London, which might be my second favorite city behind LA. Absolutely love London and the coffee culture, the pub culture, just everything about London. I think London's awesome. We went to Heidelberg, which is where my wife is from. That's her hometown. So we went out there and stayed with some friends, visited her grandma, saw her dad. And so that was cool. Beautiful city. One of the oldest university cities in the world. Saw the eclipse out there. That was great. And of course, right before the flight was when the Lakers ownership news broke. So had to go record after that. Second visit to Germany. Then we went to Belgrade, where my dad is from Serbia. I'm half Serbian, and spent some time out there with my brother and my cousins and extended family. The highlight of that part of the trip, aside from having a bunch of ćevapi and rakija, was seeing the Serbia-France game in Belgrade. I had great seats. I got to see Jokic and Wemby duke it out. It was an exhibition game, but it went down to the wire, went down to the final couple of possessions. And that was an amazing experience. The Serbian crowd was incredible. It was like a playoff game, but it was an exhibition game. So I could only imagine what an actual game with real stakes would be like, especially a playoff or championship type game out there. It was just a remarkable atmosphere. And I'd never been to a basketball game in Serbia, and it lived up to all of the hype. After that, we went to Rome. First time in Italy, first time in Rome. So did the Colosseum and had a bunch of gelato, pasta, pizza, walked around, was doing 20,000 steps every single day. And then went to Puglia for a few days. That was the low key kind of chilling, come down part of the trip. I had so much fun in every spot. And yeah, I mean, I just absolutely love London. Cannot speak highly enough of it. Germany is becoming like my second home. Serbia, I had not been back in a few years, and it was great to see family and finally experience a basketball game. And then first time in Italy, the history, the culture, the food, perfetto. So yeah, just awesome trip. And now I am back recharged and ready to roll into the season. But that'll do it for today's show. Thank you all so much for watching and listening. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back soon. I'll talk to you then.